Hi, everybody. This is Hala Taha, live from Discover Las Vegas 2018. With me here, I have Larry Lunetta. Would you please introduce yourselves to our listeners?
Good morning, Hala. Yes, this is Larry Lunetta. I'm the Vice President of Security Solutions Marketing for Aruba, which is a HP Enterprise company. And my portfolio includes the hardware and software components of the Aruba portfolio that contribute to the security of our customers.
And can you tell us a little bit about your background? How did you become an expert in this area?
So I always smile when someone asks me about being an expert. I work with a lot of cybersecurity practitioners, and I'm very respectful of their skills. I'm not that individual, but I do have a lot of background in security, and it starts back in my education. My master's thesis was focused on, at the time, what was called data security, which is now more generally cybersecurity. But where I really received a deep understanding of the problems and the potential solutions for enterprise security was in the early 2000s. I was the VP of marketing that launched a company called ArcSight in 2002. And that product was the first really enterprise security management product that was successful on the market. It ultimately became a publicly held company. It was acquired by Hewlett Packard in 2010. But, you know, that allowed me to interact with a lot of different security products and a lot of security people. And as a result, it gave me the background that I have today.
Very cool. Can you talk about some of the general trends you're seeing in the data security space?
So security in general, and people ask me, why are you so committed to security? And I've been in it, obviously, for a long time. And it's never static. It always changes. And unfortunately, that's because the attack environment continually changes. Some people characterize it as a cat and mouse game, where the cat's always ahead. And unfortunately, I think in general, that's the case. Some of the general trends are that attacks have gone from standard programmatic type approaches where if you see it once, you can be aware of it and prepare yourself for the next time it shows up. That's sort of the way antivirus works and things like that. In the business, we call that looking for the known known. But the security challenges today are based on attacks that have never been seen before. And the attackers, whether they're military units in nations or organized crime units or just simply sophisticated people who work on the dark web, are now understanding that the most successful attacks are the ones that may use elements of previous attacks, but use them in ways that have never been seen before, which means traditional security techniques may not always work. So you have that problem. The second problem is the idea of an increasingly large attack surface. So trends such as BYOD, mobility, cloud, and especially IoT make it almost impossible to build what was perhaps a traditional perimeter defense where you kept the bad guys out and the good guys were on the inside. There is no such thing now as a defensible perimeter. And as a result, you have increasingly lethal attacks focused on increasingly difficult to defend territory, which adds up to a lot of cyber stress across the organization. The other trend is that it used to be the security team's problem. You know, the organization would say, well, I know it's bad out there, but you guys, you figure it out, right? Now, cyber stress starts at the board and goes all the way through the organization because the stakes are so high. And it's not just the headlines, it's not just the brand damage. Now you have regulations such as GDPR where there are actually financial penalties for incurring data breaches associated with personal information. So it's a much, much more difficult environment to manage from a cybersecurity standpoint.
So speaking of GDPR, can you talk about some of the rules and regulations that businesses need to pay attention to?
So GDPR is an interesting concept, and it turns out that it's much more prescriptive about the process data privacy than it is about security. If you go through the regulation in detail, you'll see that there's a lot of language around how customers or employees or any client of the organization needs to opt in, how that individual is informed about how the data is being used, the concept of being forgotten. All those kinds of things, again, are very detailed, and it's probably not surprising. On the other side, what you hear about security is an organization has to have adequate security, or state-of-the-art security, or make a reasonable defense for the personal information. Well, that's not particularly helpful when it comes to understanding how to buy products and deploy technologies to protect information. But you can take clues from the process side of GDPR and start to think about, well, how security should be organized. And it turns out that some of the process that GDPR dictates is very helpful for security. In particular, it requires organizations to inventory their personal information. How much do they have? Do they need it? So there's the house cleaning process. Where is it stored? Who gets to see it? And once you have that sense of where those critical assets are, you can start to marshal your security resources to focus on protecting them. And when we talk to customers about how to organize security for GDPR, it's really about focusing your investments on the places where it will do the most good.
Can you talk about why GDPR doesn't just impact countries in the EU?
Well, there's a couple of reasons for that. A global organization will interact with European citizens around the world, right? Let's take the example of a trade show. You know, I'm at an industry trade show, and if I swipe somebody's badge, I have no idea whether that's a European citizen or not. But if I'm a global organization, I need to be sensitive to the fact that there are regulations governing what I can do with that information and how I collect it. So there's the structural challenges associated with making sure that you're following the regulation. The second thing is that GDPR, while ostensibly a European or an EU regulation, is really reverberating around the world. And there are a number of countries that are developing reciprocal GDPR agreements, in some cases because the EU is saying, if you want to trade with us, you need to make sure that your privacy standards are up to the same level as our privacy standards, because data may flow between us in ways that we can't predict. And that's definitely raising the level of awareness on the global basis. So that's another structural reason. Then there's the cultural reason. There isn't anybody that hasn't seen the headlines around privacy violations and how different types of information is being used in unexpected ways. So even if there isn't a formal GDPR type initiative, I think culturally and socially, people are much more sensitive to what information they're providing and how it's being used.
What do you think some of the biggest challenges are as businesses are trying to form their governance program around GDPR?
A part of it is the fact that the regulation isn't specific enough to be used as a recipe, right? In fact, whenever I talk about this from a implementation standpoint, I always finish up by saying, make sure your lawyer is in the room, right? Because there's a lot of interpretation that still is yet to be had regarding how the EU will deal with breaches, how they will deal with violations and things like that, what they will consider reasonable efforts, what state of the art. So it's almost like case law. There's going to have to be some examples adjudicated through the process for people to understand. That being said, there are some practical things that you can, as I said, take from the GDPR regulation and help set up your governance program and your security program. One is this concept of a data privacy officer, which is front and center for GDPR. Now, obviously, the way it's set up, not every organization is going to have a data privacy officer. There are certain guidelines that the EU has established in terms of size and mission of the organization and things like that. But I was recently in Europe, and it's very interesting that I'm starting to hear about data privacy officers as a service. So even smaller organizations can acquire DPO-type services without having to add a full-time employee to do that. And I think that, again, is just indicative of how powerful GDPR is from a compliance perspective. So the data privacy officer is not just somebody who helps interpret the regulation. There's an active role that the DPO has in terms of assessing new initiatives from a privacy impact perspective, and importantly, helping organizations deal with breaches, with violations of personal information. So even though there isn't, again, the recipe, I think what's most interesting is how the EU is asking organizations to deal with those breaches. I think everybody's heard about the 72-hour rule. And you know what the EU is saying is that if you know you've been breached, if you know that personal information has been violated, you have 72 hours to report that to the supervising authority. Essentially, you need to raise your hand and say, I've been breached. And it's not just I've been breached. You need to tell the EU and the supervising authority who was affected, what happened, what you did to prevent it, what you're doing to fix it, a whole range of information that helps the EU understand what the overall impact is. And again, this is one of these places where it's very unclear how the EU is going to handle this, but they've reserved the right that if you haven't notified them within 72 hours or if you haven't given them enough information, they can raise the tax or the fine that they levy based on the information you give them. So organizations need to prepare for a breach. You know, hopefully it never happens, but if it does happen, they need to have the processes in place. And it involves the DPO, it involves a security organization, it involves PR and AR, it involves senior management, so that if they do have to report, they have the information they need to be able to do that.
Very good. That was an awesome explanation. So thank you. So I know that a lot of the talk has been about the large tech players like Facebook and Google, and a lot of the focus has really been around that. Do you think that SMBs are going to be impacted by GDPR, and do you think that they need to take a different approach?
Again, this gets back to how aggressive the EU is going to be. And there are a lot of theories about who's going to be the first example of that, and we haven't seen it yet, and what the example will look like, you know, which industries, what kind of data, how the data is being used. So rather than speculate on that, because it's up to the EU to decide, I think you have to anticipate that if you are dealing with personal information, you are subject to the regulation, whether you're a small organization or a large one. But this gets back to the point I was making before. You don't have to overinvest in this. You can acquire, for example, data privacy officer services by the drink, if you will, or as a service, as you need it and appropriate for your organization. The amount of security that you have to put in place may not be as large, certainly, as a big enterprise. And that can also be acquired as a service. So I think ultimately businesses should look at this as a way to not only protect information, it's just better hygiene. It's better hygiene from a data management standpoint, and it's also better hygiene from a security standpoint.
Can you talk about how Aruba is supporting GDPR and data security compliance?
So Aruba has a broad portfolio of security technologies that we're recommending organizations look at in terms of GDPR compliance. So we always preface this by saying there is no silver bullet. The reason is that there's no silver bullet in general for security, and two, we don't know how the EU is actually going to, you know, play this out in terms of the things they want to see in place. But a couple things we do know. If you know where the personal information is, where it's stored, what systems house it, what applications access it, we have a technology and a solution called ClearPass. ClearPass is a network access control solution. Essentially, it's the gatekeeper to the network. And an organization can define policies regarding who and under what circumstances a user or even a device can access certain assets, such as personal information. So the first step we recommend is, you know, reduce the number of people that can access personal information. That just simply reduces your attack surface and the likelihood of a breach. And a ClearPass allows the organization to do that very efficiently and effectively. No matter where the user is, no matter how they're connecting to the network, they get the same role, the same responsibilities. So that's on the front end of the process. But unfortunately, as I said, in today's attack environment, you could be completely normal and uncompromised as you get on the network. But if you click on the wrong email attachment or visit the wrong website, malware can be introduced to your laptop or system, and you don't know that. And all of a sudden, your credentials are being used as part of the attack. And that's where the traditional security defenses really struggle, because, you know, if it looks like me doing pretty normal things in terms of accessing resources, there's no reason for any virus to raise a flag and said, you know, this system's been compromised. So the second product that Aruba offers to help deal with that situation is called Introspect. And Introspect is a very interesting product because it's designed to find attacks by virtue of changes in behavior. And the idea is, if I'm compromised, even though it's my credentials using the network and other resources, I'm using them in different ways than I have traditionally. And Introspect uses artificial intelligence and machine learning to look for those changes in behavior. And it turns out that these attacks typically work in steps. It's not a smash and grab. They land, they surveil, they expand into other parts of the network, and that could take days, weeks, or even months. So Introspect is designed to look for these small changes in behavior, and if we see enough of them, we raise a flag and say, we think there's an attack underway, and then the security team gets involved before the damage is done. So we have clear paths to control who accesses personal information, and then we have Introspect to monitor that access, you know, once the individual is on the network. And the third place that Introspect is very valuable, and it gets back to this breach notification process, we aggregate a lot of forensic information as a byproduct of our machine learning and artificial intelligence processing. That's very helpful in understanding if an attack has occurred, what occurred. We can go back and let the security team see a day, a week, a month, even 6 months ago, what a user was doing, how the attack progressed, etc. So if you think back at what the EU wants to hear about when an organization has been breached, Introspect serves a lot of that information up very quickly. So where time is absolutely of the essence, you know, the idea that Introspect can help the organization respond much more quickly and much more comprehensively is very important. So we see those places where I think the Aruba security portfolio is very relevant for GDPR, and of course more broadly across the security spectrum.
Can you talk about some of the risks with not putting a data governance program in place and some of the challenges that organizations face as they try to do this?
So, you know, data governance is obviously a very broad topic in terms of everything from encryption to backup and recovery, protection, et cetera. You know, increasingly organizations understand that their most valuable assets are data. And if you make that assumption, and it gets back to this idea of cyber stress and why the board is as interested in security as the IT team is today. If you make that assumption, which is absolutely valid, then data governance becomes central to protecting the organization. It's like a bank with money, right? You know, if they're sloppy with, you know, in traditional sense, where they stored their money, how it was handled and things like that, they're not gonna stay in business for very long. And it's now the same thing. And it's different types of data for different organizations. It's intellectual property for technology organizations. It can be mergers and acquisitions and IPO documents for a law firm. In healthcare, it's patient healthcare information. And we just talked a lot about personal information, which applies to a lot of organizations. So again, knowing where that data is, knowing how it's being controlled, knowing who can access it, monitoring that access, making sure nothing abnormal is occurring is all now part of the, you know, standard business operations. It's not some exception that happens over on the side because someone in IT wants to make sure you can back up your database.
Very good. Cool. Thank you so much.